34. Asbeth. Dinner is far more fun than it should be. I know I'm supposed to be distracting Hawk and keeping him busy so the others can work on the counterfeit pass, but I've forgotten how enjoyable it can be to just talk to him. He's as obsessed with the guild as I am, but he has a jaded, almost world-weary view of it, while mine is more optimistic. He's sick of the politics, but still loves the joy of finding something new and exciting.
Not that I get the chance to much anymore,
he admits.
I'm too busy on rescue missions. It's like the guild isn't training anyone worth a damn any longer. I'm constantly being shuffled off to haul out some twit who didn't realize he was digging next to a support beam and collapsed an entire cave. Or some Fives gear master forgot to pack rations and now they're all too weak to make it back to the surface on their own.
He shakes his head, making a face.
Who mucking forgets to pack food?
It does sound idiotic. Hawk eats 3 more servings of soup, and I devour nearly a full loaf of bread, especially after the barkeep brings me a tiny pot of honey to dip the delicious bread in. We sip ale, too, but it's expensive, and we don't want to drink Hawk's funds away. He refuses to admit that he's afraid of spiders, says I'm exaggerating. He does mention that his name was Warlock, before he became Hawk. I try not to hold it against him. He also mentions that he picked the name Hawk because it sounded fearsome, and it was easy to spell.
I'm not good with those little feather quill pens the guild uses,
he says, turning his palms up.
My hands are too big, so the less I write out, the better.
It's incredible timing you got their name when you did. I imagine there's always a Hawk in the guild.
There is, and timing has nothing to do with it.
One side of his mouth draws up in a smile.
The old Hawk was getting ready to retire. I made sure I did him a few favors and hinted that I wanted the name when he was heading out. He decided to retire the same day I graduated to full artificer.
Clever. Clever and sneaky. He tells me that someday he'd like to be a guild master, training his own recruits.
No Taurian's ever been a guild master before, though,
he says with a shake of his head.
We're too valuable in our retrieval roles, I guess.
It makes me sad, because he'd be an excellent, if stern, teacher. I should know. He's done more to prepare us for the tunnels than Magpie has. But she gets all the credit. Well, so to speak. I'm not sure she's bragging about us at the moment. So far, all we've found is a dead body. Okay, and a ring. That we stole, and I plan to steal a second one. My thoughts turn in circles as I finish off the bread, and I worry that the others aren't managing without me. Which is silly, but I still want to know what's going on. I feign a small yawn, smiling at Hawk, and then lick a droplet of honey from my thumb. I must be tired after all of those weapons drills earlier.
You need your sleep. When the conquest moon's upon me, I'm not going to let you have a moment's rest.
His gaze is locked on my thumb, and he pushes his bowl aside.
Shall we head home?
Even though he's not looking me in the eye, I feel scorched by the intensity of his gaze. I know he's thinking about sex. I know I certainly am. I flick my tongue over my thumb again, and his tail slaps against the nearest chair so hard it sounds like a whip cracking. Something inside me clenches with arousal, and I suspect if I dropped under the table right now, he'd let me. The thought fills me with heat, and while I'm a little appalled, I'm also titillated at the idea. Are we cutting through an alley? Is that me suggesting something lascivious? Absolutely. This time I absolutely see a hint of red gleaming in his eyes.
I
should be alarmed, but instead I'm excited. Then let's go. He plunks down a coin with a meaningful slap onto the table and then rises to his feet. As he does, I get an absolutely obscene eyeful of the bulge in his pants, so thick and heavy that it's obvious to all what's going on. I glance around the near-empty tavern, but luckily the barkeep is busy polishing a glass, and the Slitherskins aren't looking in our direction. There are a couple of humans near the hearth who smirk at us, and when Hawk growls low and terrifying, they quickly pay attention to their mugs again. Hawk takes me by the hand and all but hauls me out after him. I'm breathless with excitement and not entirely surprised when we stop by a familiar alley across from the brothel. There's no one outside of it, except for a couple of sex workers looking for customers, but it doesn't matter. He pushes me up against the nearest shadowy wall and tugs on the front of my bodice, freeing one of my breasts from its corseted cage and holding it to his mouth. An offering. He sucks on the tip so fiercely it's a mixture of pleasure and pain, and I whimper, digging my hands into his clothing.
Fuck. I've been staring at these pretty tits all night, watching them heave with every breath you take. How am I supposed to concentrate?
He flicks his thumb over my nipple and then lowers his head again, nipping and sucking on the sensitive tip.
Want to fuck you, Aspeth. Are you ready?
That makes me pause. You, do you mean here, in the alley, or in general? Because I'd rather my first time not be in the streets.
Not here.
He growls, and when he looks up at me, his eyes are gleaming red in the moonlight.
Home, tonight. But I'm gonna make you come first.
And he mouths my nipple with such obscene dedication that all I can do is moan and cling to him. His tongue is big and broad, and it feels as if he's going to swallow my entire breast, but he only teases it, toying with my nipple until it's flushed and sensitive, and every brush of his lips over my skin is making everything tingle. He pulls up my skirts and fits me against his hips.
Wrap your legs around me.
I do, panting. And when he bucks his hips against mine, I realize he's freed his cock from his pants and the hard length of him is rubbing against my pussy underneath my layers of clothing.
Where are your drawers?
He grits out, surprised when his cock slicks through the folds of my pussy. Not wearing tonight, I manage, locking my arms around his neck. We're not having sex here, right?
Just rubbing.
He promises me.
Fuck, you feel so good.
His cock glides through the wetness of my folds, dragging and striking against everything. And it feels as if I've caught on fire when the head of him slides against my clit.
I'm gonna come on you. Mark you with my seed. Your pussy is gonna be soaked.
I gasp at what a filthy mental image it is. Do it. Hawk groans, thrusting against me, and then hot seed spills all over my skin even as he shudders over me. He comes, and it's a rich mess of slick heat that spurts over my thighs and pussy, coating my skin. I cling to him, watching his face as he climaxes, and it's fascinating how tightly wound he is. And then, seeing him relax with a haze of pleasure. I scratch absently at the short, stubbly fur that covers his neck, the deep russet that almost matches his guild uniform. He leans over me, nearly crushing me to the wall.
Too fast,
he manages.
I should have lasted longer.
I don't mind. I squirm a little, because I'm wet and sticky down below my skirts, and it's a strange feeling. Hawk rubs his big head over the top of mine.
But you didn't come, did you? And after I promised I'd take good care of you.
His hand slips under my skirts, sliding into the wetness between my thighs. I whimper in surprise as his fingers drag through my labia, seeking my clit. And then I hiss, because I'm so wet down there that his gentle, seeking fingers practically glide over my skin. He holds me close, murmuring sweet nonsense in my ear about how pretty I am, and how much he likes it when I lose control. And all the while my thighs quiver and quake as he fingers me into bliss.
That's better.
He presses his muzzle to my sweaty brow in what must be a Taurian version of a forehead kiss, and then gently sets me onto my feet. I sway, knees weak, and he puts a supporting arm around my waist, even as he adjusts my skirts, smoothing them so they hang properly. Once that's done, he adjusts my bodice, tucking my shameless breast back into my chemise, and then adjusting the entire thing so my clothing looks pristine, and hides the mess between my thighs. I flush just thinking about it, because it's obscene and naughty, and I'm enjoying being obscene and naughty with him far more than I should. Well now, I say, and take a tottering step forward. Sure enough, everything between my thighs is wet, wet, wet. I'm not going to be able to take a step without thinking about him and what we did. How he came this close to taking my virginity in a dirty alley across from a whorehouse. It makes me pause. Hawk, if we have sex tonight, you can make me pregnant, correct? He looks down at me, incredulous.
You're asking now?
Seems like a good time to ask.
I can.
His voice is terse, and I suspect this is just now occurring to him, too.
There are charms we can use, but I don't have any on hand. It usually falls to the woman to handle such things.
When was I supposed to get a charm? I ask him. Before I came to Vast Warren, and everyone would wonder who Lady Aspeth was fucking? Or after I got here, in between drills? Hawk grunts.
Excellent point. I'll get you one.
But that changes things. We were intending to head back to the dorm and have sex tonight. We're both ready, and we both want it. Except, if we're going to have sex, shouldn't you get one before we do? He runs a hand down his face.
I'll get one first thing in the morning.
So, you and I? Tomorrow, then?
Aye, tomorrow.
He squeezes my hand.
We still have time before the conquest moon.
How much time, exactly? He rubs the back of his neck with his other hand, expression awkward.
The morning?
Oh, goodness. Not much time at all. And it has to be before then? He nods.
So I can be gentle. I don't trust myself once the hand of the god is fully upon me. Not with it being your first time and all.
I chew on my lip as we walk back to the guild dormitory in silence. I should be thinking about the conquest moon, but instead, I find myself thinking about what happens afterward. I haven't allowed myself to think that far ahead. Yet now, I can't seem to stop. What does the future look like if I take the rings and head back to my family's hold? What does the future look like if I stay Hawk's wife? I've never really allowed myself to dream about what happens next. It's always been assumed that I would marry to keep the family bloodline going, and that it would be to someone who brings either wealth or artifacts to reinforce our claim upon Honori Hold. My parents were an arranged marriage, and their parents before them. I've never contemplated what I'd do if I wasn't tied to the hold and its obligation to its people. But if I could, I'd love to stay, join the guild, hunt for artifacts. More than that, I'd love to simply research and study the ones that the guild has, immerse myself in the old Prelian culture that I love as much as everyone else in the guild. Go cave diving at my husband's side. Come home to him every night and curl up in his arms and talk about nothing more urgent than the day's findings or lack thereof. I suddenly want that so badly I ache. My eyes burn with unshed tears, and I blink rapidly, holding tightly to Hawk's hand. This is what happens when I allow myself to dream, so I won't think about it at all. It hurts too much. We're quiet as we walk back to the guild dorm, both of us lost in thought. I keep my hand tucked in his, though, because I'm afraid of letting go. I think about Hawk's words, about how this is no longer convenient, no longer transactional. And he's right. I'm feeling entirely too much, and I'm terrified of what this could mean. As we head up the sloping street toward Magpie's Nest, I see a light shining in the window. I check the front of my bodice again, immediately feeling as if I'm back in the alley with one breast hanging out. Someone stayed up late.
Never a good sign.
Hawk gives my hand a squeeze and then releases it.
Let me talk to whoever it is. Keep quiet and stay behind me.
As a holder's daughter, I've never stayed quiet, much less hid behind a man. My back stiffens. It's probably Gwenna.
Or your ex finding out you've married and come to cause trouble.
My mouth snaps shut. He might be right. I tuck my cloak tight around my dress and let him take the lead. Inside the dorm hall, there are two men seated on the bench, both in guild livery. One jumps up the moment we step through the doorway.
The guild needs all the Taurians in the city to report to the Everbelow.
The first one says,
there's been a terrible accident.
35. Asbeth.
There's no accident, Magpie announces, after Hawk sets off with the guild messengers.
She's got 5 packed bags on the table in front of her, weapons laid out.
Or there was, but it was by design. Had to say something to get him to head out.
What are you talking about? I ask, distinctly aware of the wetness between my thighs. I want to go into our quarters and clean up and change, but Magpie and the others seem determined to talk right now. What's the accident? Who was hurt?
No one should be hurt, Locke explains, casting a frustrated look toward her aunt. We just knew that Hawk wasn't going to leave your side for a regular retrieval. So we talked to the right people, and they staged a cave-in at a tunnel far away from Drop 13.
But no one was hurt, I emphasize. Right? Locke looks over at Magpie. Magpie shrugs. I'm appalled. So, not only did we collapse a tunnel that might have precious artifacts and historical findings, but there might have been someone in there?
Do you want to do this or not? Magpie demands. Because if you want to wait for Hawk to come back and try to explain that you're stealing from the guild to save your own neck, be my guest. I'm sure he'll understand.
She says it in a way that makes it very clear that Hawk would not, in fact, understand. My heart sinks. Gwenna moves to my side. We talk this over with Magpie's contact, she says, voice soothing and even as she pats my shoulder. The tunnel we collapsed is a training tunnel, and no one's utilizing it at the moment because they're all in the regular tunnels. And Magpie's friend planted a team flag in the rubble, so it'll look like someone was there, which means Hawk will be busy trying to dig them out, but it'll be discovered later that it was a clerical error, and oops, no one was ever actually down there. Meriden offers me a wavering smile.
It's a good plan, Magpie says, voice brusque. Don't weasel out on me now.
I can't believe this is the grand plan. Collapse a tunnel? Sneak away in the dark while Hawk is off saving people? Things feel as if they're spinning out of control rapidly. I thought we were supposed to get a counterfeit pass, pretend like everything had been approved.
My contact suggested this instead. Do you want to go down or not?
Magpie's impatience is evident.
The sooner we head into the Everbelow, the sooner we get back before Hawk suspects anything. He doesn't have to know about stolen rings or anything we find. In fact, it's best you don't tell him at all. The moment he knows you're a thief, he's going to turn you into the guild, and then we'll all be stripped of any rank and kicked out the door.
She gestures at me.
And then your father still won't have anything to protect his hold.
Right. Of course. The old anxiety returns, a tight ball of dread in my stomach. I'm out of choices. It's just that the timing is rotten. I can't go. Tomorrow is the Conquest Moon. Magpie shakes her head.
It's not a problem. We'll be back before dawn.
How is that possible? I think of the hours we walked last time just to get to our level. We know the area the ring will be in, but that doesn't mean we'll find it right away. There are no absolutes. The timing...
I have a way to get us in and out quickly,
Magpie says, her gaze sharp.
We can be down in the tunnels within the hour. If we don't have the ring before dawn, we'll come back and try again.
It's cutting it too close, I protest, even as I'm filled with desperate yearning. Goddess, if this could work, it would fix all my problems.
We'll be back before dawn, Magpie repeats. I swear it on Lark's life.
Hey!
Locke cries. Now, are we doing this?
The Guildmaster straightens, her shoulders going back.
Or is it all for nothing?
Her words make my innards clench with anxiety. All for nothing echoes in my head. What if she's right? What if we can get there and back before dawn? Hawk will never know, and I'll be here for the Conquest Moon. It can all line up perfectly. Tell me how we're going to get down there, I insist. Because the path takes hours to walk.
An artifact. I can't tell you more without getting someone else in trouble.
Strangely enough, hearing that fills me with confidence. An artifact. Of course it's an artifact. That's how she's going to get us in and out quickly. Even though it's risky, I have to do this. I have to. Even if I hate it. Even if it makes me anxious about the timing. We know where the ring was found. We can locate the other, bring it back prior to morning, and return before Hawk suspects anything. I promised Hawk I'd be here for the Conquest Moon, I say to Magpie. No later than dawn.
Dawn,
she agrees.
I'm fine with that.
It's decided, then. Even so, I shift my weight on my heels and am aware once more that Hawk's seed is dripping down the inside of my thighs. I have time to change, I hope. Magpie nods.
Quick, though. You're gear master for this particular excursion. I'll pack everything that you need, but we have to be gone as soon as possible. Someone's meeting us at the tunnels to drop us in, and we have to be there before he gets skittish.
Right. There's no time to waste. Our packs strapped to our backs, weapons in hand, we file through the streets of Vast Warren in the darkness, heading for the fiercely guarded heart of the city, the entrance to the tunnels of the Everbelow. I've changed into my now comfortably familiar uniform and washed up after my interlude with Hawk, and my hair is bound into a tight bun at my nape, my spectacles cleaned of all fingerprints and smudges. My body aches with fatigue, but I'm not tired. My mind is racing. I can do this. I can save my father's keep, save the people there, save my bloodline, save my own neck. This time, instead of cutting through the impressive guild hall, we move along the wall that surrounds the drop zone. We meet a stranger there, lurking in the shadows behind a shop that touches the brick of the tall wall. He emerges from the darkness with a rope ladder, gesturing that we should hurry.
If you get caught, it's on you,
he says, handing it over and then racing away once Magpie presses a coin into his hand.
Luck to you.
Encouraging, Gwenna murmurs to me, but she always gets sassy when she's worried. Me, I just get an anxious knot in my gut that grows larger by the minute. Hope you feel like climbing a rope in the middle of the night. Well, it was part of the obstacle course, I have to admit, watching as Magpie hooks it against the crenellation with skill. A moment later, Kip scales the darn thing without pause. They did try to train us. So they did, damn it. Gwenna makes a face and steps forward. Fine, I'll go next. Let's get this over with. Despite her griping, Gwenna clambers up the wall with little effort and disappears onto the other side. Lark and Meriden each go up, both with a fair amount of skill, and I'm proud of them for how far they've come. A month ago, we wouldn't have been able to manage. When it's my turn at the rope, I'm not nearly as adept as the others. I manage to get about halfway up before my arms get weak and I struggle. Magpie climbs up behind me and shoves on my backside, foisting me over the edge of the tall wall. There's another rope down the other side, and I manage to more or less tumble down this one without hurting myself. It stings to know that I'm the least skilled of our five, but when they pat me on the back and mama encouraging things, I know they don't care. We're in this together. Magpie gathers the rope and ushers us forward.
Come on, she whispers. Mind your step and stick to the path. If you fall into a pit, I'm not coming after you.
She points ahead.
Follow me to the drop.
We creep after her, and I'm at the back of the group. I can't help but feel that with the grounds deserted at night, it's like moving through a cemetery full of open graves. The wide open pits yawn in the darkness, and I imagine losing my footing and stumbling into one, only to fall to my death in the ruins of Old Prell. Quietly, I hook a finger into Gwenna's belt ahead of me. Wish we'd roped ourselves together. There's something about this that seems off, she tells me. It feels weird. Wrong. I know what she means. Seeing the guild grounds deserted like this is strange. Of course it feels wrong. We're sneaking in after dark to steal artifacts and lying to everyone. Poor Hawk is really going to hate me after this. Does Magpie seem a little manic to you? She asks. I glance ahead. It's true that Magpie is highly alert right now, her eyes bright with determination. Maybe she's eager to help us steal. Either that, or she just wants this done quickly. Perhaps we're just not used to seeing her sober. Gwenna snorts. That could be it, I. As we cut through the massive, deserted yard, a light flicks on, and I see a man's face in the shadows. It isn't until we get closer that I see he's holding the same strange wand I saw previously. It's the man who is using the portal wand to transport Rock. He's wrapped in a dark cloak and looks at Magpie nervously.
Is everyone here?
Yes. You know how to direct that thing to the drop.
Wait, we're not lowering ourselves down in the basket? Locke asks, confused. Why ever not?
Because I bribed the portal master, that's why.
Magpie gives her an annoyed look.
Just shut your mouth and come stand next to me.
But don't I need to tie in with my five?
Isn't necessary.
Her aunt tells her, gesturing that Locke should come to her side again.
Come on.
But Locke hesitates, glancing over at Kip and Meriden, and then where I stand, behind Gwenna. I'm pretty sure the rules state...
The rules state a lot of things, Magpie snarls at her. Including that you shouldn't steal from the guild, but we're not paying attention to that part, are we?
Locke jerks back in surprise, wounded by her aunt's tone. Sorry, I was just asking. I don't think it's foolish to be cautious, I say, stepping forward. And we've taught ourselves to tie together quickly. We can do so now.
Fine, whatever. Magpie gives a cross look to the portal master. I hope you don't mind waiting on this nonsense. He shrugs, uneasy.
You're paying me.
I don't like this. I don't like it because it makes me wonder how many others bribe their way into the ever below under the cover of night and steal from the guild. I don't like that I would normally condemn such deeds, and instead I'm about to break the rules myself. I shove down all those unhappy feelings and rope myself in, passing it along to Gwenna quickly. She ties herself to me, and then we go down the line until we're all tied together and in position, lock behind Kip. Magpie watches us with annoyance, and then shakes her head.
Fine. Get ready to step through to the drop when he opens the portal.
We step through, and immediately I can feel the cool shift of the air. The night was warm above, but down below it's chilly and slightly damp. I hug my cloak closer and move toward the others so I don't jerk on the rope. The tunnel seems larger than before, which surprises me, but perhaps I misremembered it in my awe at being in Old Prel. Gwenna flicks on the lantern atop her staff, as she's navigator this time, and holds it aloft, looking around. My heart flutters in my throat once more at the sight of the glory of the ancient city, of the toppled columns and the broken cobblestones beneath our feet, and the lichen that grows over everything. What I wouldn't give to wander through all the tunnels and just drink it all in. Kip pulls out his blade and eyes the tunnel behind us, taking a step forward and then patting his belt, frowning. He turns to Lark and then makes a gesture.
Flags, right. We forgot our flags, Lark says, to mark our place.
No flags tonight, Meriden points out, tugging the hood of her cloak over her tight curls. She has no cap over her head this evening, because we felt it would be too obvious if we ran into anyone else in the guild. Just ask Magpie. The guild would have flags down here anyhow, I say, touching a series of glyphs carved into the wall. It looks familiar, but it's hard to tell for certain. To ensure no one else digs in a spot that's under investigation. Are we sure this is the right place?
Let me check. Wait right here, Magpie says.
She turns and heads down the narrow tunnel, and then bends over. There's something glowing in her hand, and she draws a line across the tunnel floor with it, leaving an iridescent mark on the stone.
Sorry, Lark.
Sorry for what?
Lark asks, pushing back to where her aunt is. We move along after Lark, trained to walk together, and when she heads for the chalk line, she's immediately thrown backward, as if she's run into a wall. With a yelp, Lark stumbles, caught by Meriden and myself. I gasp in shock, even as Lark struggles to her feet.
Magic. Something's not right.
What the fuck is that?
Lark demands, dusting off her jacket. Magpie holds up the chalk from her spot on the other side of the line.
Magic, of course. She turns to the portal master. You can send him down now.
I approach the chalk line, cautious. The closer I get to it, the more my hair stands up from my nape, the air humming around us. I poke the butt of my staff against the chalk line, only to have it jerk violently backward in my grasp. It's a spell, I tell the others.
No shit,
Magpie says.
And you, the great scholar.
I ignore her, turning to the others. The chalk must produce an entrapment spell. We can't break free without her rubbing the line out on her side. Lark struggles out of Meriden's grasp and surges forward again.
What the fuck, Aunt Magpie?
Magpie spreads her hands in mock apology.
I told you not to tie in with them, Lark darling. But you chose them over me. That's fine. I'll drink a bottle in your name.
She turns her head as the portal shimmers and two new men come through. I gasp, stunned, as Barnabas arrives to stand at Magpie's side, one of his soldiers close by him and holding a crossbow. What's going on? Barnabas smirks at me.
I made your teacher a better offer. That's what's going on.
He holds his hand out, and Magpie drops the chalk into it.
Do you like my new toy?
If I say no, does it change anything? I'm furious at him, of course, but my old training kicks in, and I stiffen my back, putting on my bored holder lady expression, the one I wear at every social gathering. You need to let us go.
I don't need to do anything.
Barnabas tosses the chalk between his hands, then lifts it into the air, admiring the curved handle that holds the delicate piece of chalk in place.
Though it is rather fortunate that one of my other teams located this just yesterday. It makes holding you captive far too easy.
Is that what this is, then? I ask, drawing myself up indignantly. A hostage situation? Let the others go, and you and I can figure out the problems between us. Barnabas just rolls his eyes and flips the chalk and holder once more, unbothered by my demand. Lark takes another step forward to the barrier, only for Kip to pull her back again. Why are you doing this, Aunt Magpie? She's clearly heartbroken. I don't understand. How do you not understand? Magpie snarls, her expression full of venom. She gestures at Barnabas. He's paying me a great deal of coin, and I need security. The guild is going to remove my contract with them unless my team graduates this year, and I'll lose my commission. And we all know your five won't pass the tests. There's no way. Lark flinches. I just glare at our teacher. Former teacher. She sold us out. Don't look at me like that. Magpie rolls her eyes. At least with this Lord Ling's money, I can drink myself to death without worrying about keeping a roof over my head. It's not all about you. I tell myself to be calm and collected, even as my hands curl into fists. How can you betray Hawk like this? I'm not betraying him. I'm looking out for me. The two have nothing to do with each other. She focuses her angry gaze on me. And you. You spoiled, foolish twit. Do you have any idea how hard I had to work to get my spot in the guild? Do you know how many years I suffered through bullshit before anyone took me seriously? You can't saunter in as some rich girl and expect the same treatment just because you'll suck a Torian's cock. It takes more than that to be a damned guild master. I gasp at her words, stung. This is the person I idolized for so long. I looked up to you. Then that's your mistake, Magpie says. All I've ever wanted was to get paid. Barnabas clears his throat.
Are you ladies done jabbing at each other? Because I'd like to talk with my fiancé.
I'm not your fiancé, I retort. You can't force me to marry you.
I know this, seeing as how you hooked yourself to the first male who glanced in your direction. A Torian, Asbeth, truly.
He looks revolted.
Was a human cock no longer big enough for you? Is that it? You have to go for something a little more titillating?
You're both horrid and disgusting. Hawk is worth 10 of you. I flick my fingers at them. Both of you together.
Yes. Well, you'll be pleased to know I'm no longer interested in marrying some bull man's leavings.
Barnabas pockets the chalk and its magical holder and pats his clothing, reassuring himself that it's in place.
In fact, you can stay married to him for all I care. I'm willing to let bygones be bygones, so long as you give me the artifact ring you found.
I go still. because of all the demands I thought he'd make, I'd somehow forgotten about the artifact ring. How is it that he's imprisoned us in the tunnel without stealing it for himself first? How is it that he hasn't figured out that I'm penniless, and he doesn't need it to take over Honori? Or does he just think I'd steal willy-nilly from the guild? That might be the most insulting part of this, that he doesn't know me at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
The ring,
he enunciates, his voice echoing off the narrow stone walls of the tunnel.
The one you found in the tunnel. Magpie told me all about it.
I shoot a dirty look at my teacher, and Lark makes another outraged noise. Magpie ignores both of us.
I want the ring,
Barnabas repeats again, pointing at the floor.
Take it off and kick it over here.
Something doesn't add up. Why not come and take it, coward? He sneers at me.
I'm no fool. Your maid told Magpie all about the curse.
Curse? What is he talking about? In that moment, Gwenna steps on my foot. It's true, she says to me. I told Magpie all about how it can't be transferred to another owner without permission once it's been worn, that the runes on it are quite clear about that. Quick thinking, Gwenna. I could kiss her for being so smart. She anticipated trouble and lied to keep the artifact safe. Oh, you told them? I pretend to be annoyed. Well, it changes nothing. I still won't transfer the ring's power over to you, Barnabas, no matter how many times you ask. He keeps smiling.
It's useless to you. We can make a bargain.
I'm sure we can. One that involves me selling out my family or my friends. Or both. It's useless to you, too.
Yes, but I have the means to get the other half.
His smile grows broader.
I can have a team scouring every drop by morning, and you're stuck here in this tunnel. You might as well give up.
You're right, I say neutrally. Fine. You want the ring in exchange for letting us go?
I want the word of power, too.
It's not a word. It's a gesture. Here, I'll show you. And I make the rudest, crudest gesture I can think of. Lark snorts with laughter. Barnabas's expression grows cold.
I see you choose to be a child about this.
He shrugs.
Fine. We can pull it off your dead body in a few weeks once the unfortunate cave-in has been dug out.
Unfortunate cave-in? I eye the ceiling. It's close, but it looks solid. When I look back at Barnabas, he takes the crossbow from his retainer. Too late, I see it has a strange rounded end. I've only ever seen that in a war treatise of some kind, and they were always filled with some sort of explosive. Oh no. The moment I realize it, Magpie ducks her head, racing away. Lark flings her shield over us. Explosive! She howls. The rock walls of Old Prel move and shake above us. And then something hits my head. Everything goes black, and the tunnel collapses around us.
36. Hawk. Something about this is all wrong. I can't quite shake the feeling of wrongness, even as I continue to dig and drop 27 for hours on end. It's definitely collapsed in on itself. Even now, there's the occasional rumble of stone indicating movement in the rocks. Cave-ins happen all the time. It's a hazard of the job. I've dug out dozens in my time. But something isn't adding up, and I can't quite figure out what. It bothers me as I dig through rock, tossing boulders into the magic portal held open nearby by Master Siskin's partner. He's not as high-ranked as Siskin, but Siskin shares his toys with his lover, and so Tern has been here at my side all night long, keeping the portal open so I can remove the rubble. The thing that strikes me the oddest about this is that we're the only two here. Cave-ins are always a threat when dealing with the cavernous ruins. Old Prell fell into the earth, and so it stands to reason that it would keep collapsing in on itself without much prompting. That's not the strange part. It's that no one else has arrived to assist. The other Taurians I normally work with on rescues are out of the city, of course. But someone else should be taking their place. There should be a handful of us here, trying to keep it together despite the moon's near rising. If someone is in danger, buried under the rubble, shouldn't someone care enough to send more than just one tired Taurian down into the tunnels? But perhaps they're just late in showing up. I continue in my rescue efforts, tossing great slabs of rock out of the way and rolling a boulder into the portal. I work until I'm sweating and covered in a fine layer of dust, and then pause to take a sip from my canteen. As I do, I glance over at my silent, yawning companion. "Where are the others?" He blinks at me, sleepy.
"What others?"
"The others coming to assist with the rescue."
"Oh," he ponders for a moment. "I don't know. They're usually more Taurians for a rescue, aren't there?"
"Usually," I agree. I wipe my brow and get back to work, but I can't shake the niggling feeling that something about this is off. After a while, I notice dawn light streaming in through the portal, and still no one has arrived to help. The rocks are getting larger, to the point that even a Taurian can't lift them. And the only other one here, Tern, isn't going to be much help physically. I wipe my sweating face and fight the feeling of annoyance rising through me because mistakes happen. Paperwork gets lost. The rest of the rescue team still hasn't been diverted this way.
"It does seem so," Tern agrees. "Someone should be coming by to spell us."
I nod, eyeing the collapsed tunnel. I don't want to leave if someone is trapped in there, but at the same time, I can't dig out the entire thing on my own. "What team is assigned to this drop again?"
"Grosbeak's team," he says immediately, pulling out a parchment roster and eyeing it. "His 5 fledglings."
A fledgling team? A nightmare scenario. And no one is here to dig them out except us? I take the roster from him and read down it carefully. Surely not everyone is deployed in the tunnels because of the lordling and his bounty. I'm used to being called in on rescue missions, but not everyone goes into the ruins. Even so, I scan the list, looking for a team that might be working a nearby drop so they can come assist, and then I pause. Grosbeak's 5 are at drop 7. This is drop 27.
"But it's caved in? This is the right drop tunnel."
Tern leans over my shoulder, looking at the roster, and points a dusty finger at the bottom of the page, even as the portal sputters out behind him.
"They're listed on here twice."
So they are. I skim the roster list, looking for anyone else who might have been assigned to this particular drop, but there's no one else. Just Grosbeak's 5, and they might not even be here. Who exactly reported this tunnel collapse? Tern digs in his pocket for the message and holds it up to the lantern we have sitting on a nearby rock.
"Ah, here it is," he glances up at me. "The tunnel collapse was reported by Guildmaster Magpie."
Magpie? What's she up to now? And why does she want me out of the way?
Aspeth. I wake up to a small, sticky hand patting my face and a throbbing pain above my ear. Everything aches. I open my eyes, whimpering, when it's just as dark with them open as it is with them closed. The tunnel collapsed on us. Magpie turned against us. Barnabas tried to kill us. Maybe he succeeded. Maybe I'm in the Death God's entrance to hell. The small, sticky hand pats my cheek again. "Kip, is that you?" This time he gives me a little squeezing pinch on the cheek, like an old grandmother. I suppose that's him reassuring me. I flex a hand, and rocks clatter away from my fingers. Everything seems whole, if a little bruised. I think that's a good sign. I'm lying against something warm and soft. I try to sit up, only to smack my forehead against rock. "Ow!" Kip
pats my cheek again, and then I hear the sound of rummaging. There's the click of a striker, and then light flares. Kip has a stub of a candle in his hand, and he holds it up. It's worse than I thought. The pocket we're in is surrounded by tumbled rock. The rocks themselves are oppressively close to my face, and if I sit upright, I'll be face first into the rubble. I stretch an arm out and touch a toppled Prellian column, against which Lark's shield and Kip's house and my quarterstaff have created a kind of triangle of protection for us. The top of Kip's shell house is broken into a dozen pieces, but the little guy seems none the worse for wear. He holds the candle stub up to my face, peering, and I realize that my spectacles are broken. For some reason, that makes me angrier than anything. Does Magpie realize how fucking hard it is to find spectacles that fit just right? Ugh! I pull them off and toss them aside, and as I do, I notice I'm lying atop another person. Shit! Shit, shit, shit! I scramble away as best I can, not easy considering that the room I have is less than the size of my clothing trunk, and try not to panic. Gwenna and Meriden are under Lark, who tried to protect them with her body. I roll Lark off of them, and she groans, her clothing torn. We wake each person up as best we can. Gwenna has a bloody nose, and Meriden is scratched up, her ankle swollen. Lark clutches her ribs, but considering that we've just survived being buried in a cave-in, we're doing amazing. Is everyone all right? I manage, wiping at a strand of blood trickling down my cheek. No one trapped under anything?
I'm trapped under a shit ton of rock with four other people,
Lark jokes, and then winces, pressing a hand to her waist.
Oh, fuck, that hurts.
Let's not think about the shit ton of rock, all right? I offer. Let's think about how we can get out of here.
We can't,
Gwenna states, holding a length of ripped sleeve under her nose to stem the bleeding. She hunkers down between myself and Meriden, and we're all crammed in here like matchsticks in a tinderbox.
If we move something, we could collapse the entire tunnel on us and die for sure.
Well, we can't stay here. Already, the rocks just overhead feel oppressive. I want to stretch my legs and stand upright, and the longer I can't do it, the more I feel the intense need to do so. I focus on Kip and his tiny candle, already burning down to nothing.
Let's think. Where are our supply bags?
Buried, Meriden says in a small voice. Just like us. I can examine everyone, but I don't have anything to treat you with.
It's fine. We're fine. I keep a bright smile on my face. I'm good, but look over the others.
Meriden does a quick check, but there's nothing to be done for Gwenna's busted nose or Lark's ribs. They need a guild healer.
I'm good, Lark says. Had worse in a bar fight.
I just want out,
Gwenna moans. We're working on it. Gwenna whimpers with distress at my reassurance, and I reach over and grab her hand, holding it tightly.
Kip, what else do you have in your house? Anything we can use for light?
He scrambles up to his shell again and digs into the side, squirming his way under a broken piece and tossing out a few more bits. There's a bag full of stale cookies, a bundle of string, a handful of nuts, and one more tiny candle. We have no water to drink, very little food, and I'm trying hard not to think about how much rock could possibly be over us.
Thank you, I tell Kip and hand the cookies to Meriden and Gwenna, because they're both looking shaky. You two eat these.
I expect Lark to complain, but she doesn't. Even clutching her ribs, she seems more settled than both Gwenna and Meriden, who look like they might fall apart at any moment. I keep talking in order to seem like I have everything under control. I think with the nuts and a bit of ripped fabric, we might be able to make a candle that will burn longer. In Prell, they used nut oil in their candles, and that's why it left greasy smears on a lot of the paint in the ruins. Well, it
isn't important. The important thing is that we're not going to run out of light, all right? We'll figure something out. Locke nods.
Once I catch my breath, I can try to see if any of the rocks are loose.
No, you stay where you are. Kip, are there any cracks in the rocks that you can squeeze through? I shift my weight, nearly hitting my head on the oppressively low ceiling again. If so, see if you can figure out the best way out. If not, just let me know. We've got options. Options? Gwenna lets out a hysterical bark of laughter. What fucking options do we have? Die fast or die slow? No, I say firmly. First of all, if we can't find a solution out of the rubble, then we wait here. I don't use the words cave-in or buried alive, even though it's the first thing that comes to mind. Since Gwenna is still panicky, I decide to go further with my lies. There was a team about 30 years ago that lived in the tunnels for a month before they were rescued. They ate moss and drank trickles of water that came in through the rock. We'll be fine. People survive in the ruins all the time. We can wait for rescue. It's not true, of course. I'm certain teams are rescued from dire cave-ins regularly, but after a certain amount of time passes, it's generally assumed that all are lost. I've read plenty of dramatic stories about such tragedies, but I keep that to myself. Kip nods and points at the rocks, then heads into the jumble, squeezing between a few precariously perched stones even as the stub of the candle flickers and wavers. The rope around him slithers, and Lark hastily unties it from her waist, wincing the entire time. He's a hero, Kip. When we get out of here, I'm making sure that everyone knows how amazing he is. He's kept his cool all this time, and I need to do the same. So I take the flickering stub of candle and light the taller one. Everyone untie and give Kip some slack to explore. Gwenna? Yes?
Her voice sounds shaky, even as she unties the rope at her waist.
Do you think you can douse for us if Kip isn't successful? She makes another hysterical sound in her throat. Douse for what?
For whatever tugs you, I say, keeping my tone even and soothing.
If you can douse for a way out, that's perfect. If not, just douse for an artifact, and we'll see where that takes us. We're just considering our options.
Options! Right. Okay. She sniffs, and another line of blood drips from her nose.
Shit!
You're all right. We're all a mess right now. I reach over and give her hand a squeeze. The rope at my waist jumps. I've been so busy coaching the others that I've forgotten to untie myself.
Sorry, Kip, I call out. Hang on.
It jerks out of my hands and snags against the rocks. Pebbles rain down on us. Gwenna screams and holds on to me, and just then the entire ceiling overhead seems to shift and groan. Oh, Lady Asteria, we're going to die. Under the shield, I call out. Everyone try to get your head under the shield. The largest of rocks sinks inward, tumbling down, and I scream, waiting for the rest of Old Prell to collapse over us. Instead, Kip bounces down and brushes dust and pebbles out of my hair, and I look up into a yawning cavern of darkness. We're out. Sort of.
37. Hawk, the Conquest Moon. Outside, I can see the rounded body of the Conquest Moon looming in the early dawn skies. The hand of the god will be fully upon me tonight. There's no more time to waste. I need to find Asbeth and prepare her for our mating. There's still time for me to get a charm for her, still time to find a cream to ease my way into her tight virginal body. But when I find Magpie seated in the dormitory kitchen, sharing drinks with a well-dressed stranger, all logic vanishes. I think of the frustrating night I just spent digging in a tunnel, and for some mucking reason it looks like she's celebrating. Something's wrong. Who the fuck is this? I demand as I storm in. Why are you drinking again? She stares at me in open-mouthed surprise.
What are you doing back so early?
A hot, hostile anger comes over me. Early, am I? Exactly who am I supposed to be digging out, Magpie?
How would I know?
She feigns ignorance, but it only makes me angrier. I recognize the full-throttle anger churning in my gut, but I'm helpless to stop it. I storm over to my quarters, but Squeaker is waiting there by her empty bowl. She howls at the sight of me, plaintive, and circles around her empty food dish. There's no sign of Aspeth. I return to the kitchen, where Magpie is fighting back a smirk. Where are the others? Where is my wife?
Your wife?
The man sneers.
Your marriage has been annulled, Bull Man. Not that it should have happened in the first place.
Red floods my vision. Aspeth wouldn't do that.
She's not here, though, is she?
He sounds so very confident. And where is she? I demand again.
Left,
Magpie says, slurring her words. No surprise she's had too much to drink once more.
Poor little lady left town and went back to Daddy's hold.
It's a lie. They're mucking lying to me. Aspeth is infuriating and spoiled and hard-headed, but she's no deal-breaker. I think of last night in the alley, and how she'd looked up at me with such heated eyes, how she'd reached for me. None of that was a lie, was it? I think of Aspeth's soft expression as she gazed up at me, how she'd let me eat her soup as we talked. The nights we'd lain awake in bed while she petted her cat and told me about her excitement over joining the guild. Her cat. Squeaker's bowl was empty, the cat indignant. Aspeth would never abandon her cat. Aspeth would never let it skip a meal. I eye Magpie and the oddly triumphant stranger, and then I move forward. I grab Magpie by her brown master's jacket and haul her to her feet.
What? What are you doing?
I'm bringing you both to the Royal Artifactual Guild, I announce. You can tell Rooster what you've done to your fledglings.
38. Aspeth. Barnabas's stupid chalk has saved us. We climb carefully from the rubble, retrieving our packs as we do. On the other side of the chalk line, the cavern is destroyed, the rocks blocking the tunnel so large it would take 10 Taurians to budge them. On this side of the chalk line, there's nothing but a cascade of slightly larger rocks, most of them moved with just a bit of shoving. Most of the cave-in seems to have occurred on the other side of the chalk line, with its invisible shield protecting us, even as it prevents us from leaving. Once we're free of the rocks, I suck in a deep breath and try not to think about all the rocks still pressing on us from overhead, of how nothing but a narrow tunnel is between us and death. I'm going to have nightmares about rocks and cave-ins at some point, but for now, I'm forcing myself to think of other things. All right, ladies and lizard, let's get our packs on and rope together again. Kip, you take sword. Lark, you're our shield. And Mare, you're our healer. Gwenna, are you good with navigating? What do you mean? She asks, giving me a tired, blank look in the flickering candlelight. Our lantern was smashed in the collapse, and we're still down to only a candle for light, but at least we're not buried. We should just sit and wait. That was the plan before, I announce. Now the plan is that we're going to find our own way out. Why can't we just wait for someone to come and get us? Meriden looks up from wrapping her ankle with strips of gauzy bandages. It's almost Hawk's conquest moon time, right? He's going to come looking for you. I flinch at her words. It is the time of the conquest moon, true, and the one thing that has been impressed upon me is that once it arrives, Hawk won't have control. Even now he might not be sensible. He might be in bed with a stranger, even as I rot in the ever below. My heart aches at the thought. We can't assume anything, not with Magpie and Barnabas working together. How do we know that she didn't tell someone we left the city? But the drop
is an unlucky one, Locke points out. No one's going to sign up for 13 unless everything else is taken. It could be weeks before it gets out of the guild's paperwork piles anyhow. It might take the investigation team a while to get to it, and we don't know what my aunt is telling them.
Or Barnabas. He's kind of shitty, Gwenna adds. She looks over at me. No offense. None taken. He is kind of shitty. I put my hands on my hips, and a shooting pain jolts up my arm. I must have tweaked it in the cave-in. Doesn't matter. I move my hand from my hip and gesture at our surroundings. For all we know, they've been planning things for a while. This is drop 13 again, right? Even though they wanted the other half of the ring, they dropped us here. The way I see it, they either want to collect the paired rings from our dead bodies, or they dumped us here because it's easiest for their lives.